Welcome back. So glad to have a good old friend with us today, John Hinderacher. He is a founder and publisher of the Powerline blog. He is also now in the think tank business. And I don't think, John, you and I have spoken. Gosh, I hope it's not been that long, but I knew you went there. I just don't know that we've spoken since you took over the helm. Do you want to say a word or two about where you're planting yourself these days?
Sure, absolutely, Seth. Thanks for having me on.
You bet.
Well, I practiced law, as you may remember,
yes,
Seth,
I do.
For about 41 years,
yeah.
And I figured that was about enough.
That's as much fun as you can take. Yeah, okay.
At the end of last year, I retired from the law business, and the next day I took on a new job as president of Center of the American Experiment, which is Minnesota's think tank. And the center is a public policy organization. We produce papers and legislative proposals, and we do a lot of activism. We're on the radio all the time. We're on television. We've published op-eds in 46 Minnesota newspapers so far in 2016. We produce videos and radio ads. We're really having a lot of fun, and we're doing our best to transform the civic culture here in Minnesota.
For those that are more interested, John, you want to give out a website to your think tank?
AmericanExperiment.org. We have completely revamped the website. It's got a brand new look and new functionality. AmericanExperiment.org. Yeah, please do take a look.
Great. And congratulations and Godspeed to all those that effort there. It's not slowing you down at Powerline. There's really, John, you know, I honestly, I know you're not in Phoenix, so you wouldn't really know this, but I am not a guest-heavy show. I'm just not. My producer's nodding his head. You know, and there's about 6 to 8 people I just want to hear from a lot, and I don't call them that often because I don't want to tax them too much. Public intellectuals who I still think are saying interesting things, and you're one of them, and I couldn't hold off or resist calling you this morning and now this evening, so I'm glad you could do this. You had a piece, the title of which, I guess you're lucky in that you actually get to title your pieces at Powerline. You get to put your own titles on your op-eds.
That's right.
But this is, every part of the title is what really moved me, because as we're going through this race thing really leading up to Dallas and since, you know, there's been a lot of commentary that's angry, bitter, a little political gotcha. More than anything, I've been just sad about the situation we find ourselves in. And the headline of your piece was Victims of a Misapprehension of Fact. And that's really, I hadn't put those words together myself. I'm glad you did. Would you say a few words about this? Because that's what's going on here. There is misapprehension of fact. I think some of it is deliberate. Some of it is political. But we're creating victims because of it. And it's in a community that's been victimized enough. And maybe it's the whole American community in some respects. But I think you know where I'm going, and I've spoken too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I did an earlier post a couple of days previously, the title of which was, Are Blacks Disproportionately Involved in Police Shootings?
Right.
And the answer to that question, as I tried to show statistically, using data primarily from a study the Washington Post did on 2015 police shootings, the answer to that question is no, blacks are not disproportionately being shot by police officers. They're about 26% of the of people who were killed by police officers in 2015, but they also commit 24% of the violent crimes according to Department of Justice statistics, and so blacks have more encounters with police officers per capita than most other segments of the population, and they are not, in fact, being disproportionately shot. And like others, whether you're talking about whites or Hispanics or Asians or whatever, about three-quarters of the time when an African-American is shot by a police officer, he is in the midst of attacking either that police officer or somebody else. So those numbers are consistent. You know, they vary slightly, as numbers always do, but those numbers are basically consistent across ethnic groups. So this whole idea that police officers are out there kind of hunting down young black men and wantonly shooting them, you know, it's just an outrageous lie. And I think that the people who are mostly behind it know that it's an outrageous lie. I think it's being circulated for political reasons. We can talk about that later if you want to get into it. I think it's unbelievably cynical, and I fault people like Barack Obama for it. But as I said in the title of my second post, Seth, I think that the big lie that we're all witnessing has real victims. And those victims, there's different types of victims, but one kind of victim is people who are misled by the lie, and that's really what that post was about.
That's right, John. And there's some other interesting stuff in here. I mean, there's a lot in here I'd like to disaggregate with you if I can. But one of the interesting things, I think I learned it yesterday. I either learned it or I just never thought about it. But not only blacks and percentages with encounters with police, I learned yesterday they also disproportionately call on the police more than any other group. I don't know if you knew that or if people had focused on that. That was just kind of news to me yesterday. I'd learned that from another scholar, that they're also disproportionately calling on them.
It makes sense,
yes.
Because they're so often victimized by crime,
exactly.
Which is the other side of the same coin. Blacks perpetrate a lot of crimes primarily against other blacks, and they're way disproportionately victims of crime.
That's exactly right. And the problem, though, is that I think you put your finger on it. There is a political interest in keeping these lies going. There's a political interest in any of these kinds of statistical lies we hear about, like whatever the crazy number was about colleges and sexual assault. What was it, 1 in 3 or something like that?
What,
or 1 in 5? I mean,
yeah,
just
right.
A crazy number. But there is an invested industry in this, and we shouldn't be shy about pointing it out. There is a self-perpetuating, self-interested industry in perpetuating these things to keep these things going. There is an industry dedicated to keeping Americans' teeth on edge.
Well, that's right.
I made a mistake.
There's also a political party. And what I would say, Seth, is that what drives a lot of this narrative is the fact that the Democratic Party, to win national elections and to win a lot of state elections, has got to carry a ridiculous percentage of the African-American vote.
John, I made a mistake. John, I set up a big question as we're going into break, Can I just hold you over and we'll pick this up on the other side?
Absolutely.
Great. And then I want to talk about this thing that was just eerie, the Isaiah Crowell thing. We'll be right back with John Hinderacher.
Coffee beans grow by the billions, so they've got to find those extra cups.
Well, I for one, am glad John Hinderacher left the law business for the nonprofit business. I can keep him longer because I'm not competing with the $800 an hour clients that he would rather run to. Now you're in nonprofit, John. You're built for just doing radio with me. So we have John Hinderacher from the Powerline blog, also the Center of the American Experiment. We're talking about victims of misapprehension of fact, a very important and yet short piece he did at Powerline. But John, before we were going into break, you were talking about this self-interested perpetuity of what would you call it, teeth on edge. But go ahead, sir.
Yeah, well, I think a big factor, the biggest factor, Seth, is that the Democratic Party, to be successful, needs to carry an absurd percentage of the African-American vote. It's ridiculous for a political party to get 90, 95, 98% of any
sure.
vote,
sure.
You know, no matter how you slice it. And yet the Democrats realize that if they don't get that kind of overwhelming percentage of the African-American vote, they can't win. And so they have this need to keep black Americans in this constant frenzy, you know, constantly riled up and believing that they're threatened on all sides. There's people trying to kill them and keep them down and prevent them from voting. And, you know, it's terrible. And you know, these claims are at odds with all reality, and yet they are trumpeted not just by the Democratic Party itself, but by the media, and you know, we hear them all around us.
Yeah, there's an investment in anxiety. There's some kind of psychological term for it. I don't know, thriving on chaos or something. But that's how they thrive. That's how the Democrats thrive. And it would be nice. I mean, the Republican Party candidate, whom you and I may have different views on, I wholeheartedly endorse, but I will say one of his Achilles heels, he's not great at calming waters. I mean, I think we need calm. And of his many Achilles heels, he's not great at that. But
no,
we do need that. We do need someone to calm these waters a bit, don't we?
Well, you know, ideally, the president, of course, is the one who should be doing that. But
right.
I will say, you know, Trump wasn't my choice. I doubt that he was yours. But one thing about Trump, we also need somebody who will stand up to this and not feel like he's got a knuckle under to it. Now, I'm not sure if Trump is really doing that. I know he's called himself the law and order candidate. But I seriously hope that he will, you know, take this head on and say, look, folks, these are not the facts.
I think if anyone is willing to dive or drive into the politically correct grinding machine, it's him. I mean, that's what he has been good at. I thought his speech yesterday was very good. I played a lot of it, John. I just thought it was on that Law and Order stuff. It's the kind – I thought it was the adult in the room. I thought it was the kind of speech it would have been amazing if Barack Obama would have given. But instead, the kind of speeches Barack Obama has given have led to kind of the what's the word I want? The chaos moment we're in.
Well, that's right. He's poured fuel on the fire. And that's why we have these people who, in my view, are really deceived by what they keep hearing. And it leads them to do kind of awful things.
This picture you posted from Instagram, it was my jaw nearly hit the floor, at least figuratively it did. Isaiah Crowell, it looks like something out of ISIS. Can you describe it a little bit?
You know, this guy, Isaiah Crowell, is a running back for the Cleveland Browns. You know, he makes a lot of money. You know, he's not some gutter dweller. And he posted on Instagram a picture, an image of a guy dressed in black, kind of like an ISIS executioner, but with something around his neck that looks kind of like an American flag. And he's got a police officer, and his hands are tied behind his back, the officers, and he's got the guy's jaw in one hand with a black glove, and then with his other hand, he is chopping the police officer's neck with a hatchet, and there's blood spurting everywhere. So it's like an ISIS executioner killing a police officer, a white police officer in a blue uniform. And then he had to accompany this image, this Cleveland Browns football player wrote, they give polices all types of weapons and they continuously choose to kill us.
Right, right. They continuously choose to kill us. The image itself is so stark it defies even your explanation. I want to urge people to go to Powerline to take a look at it. It's just a horrible picture. But then the lie that you've been talking about, the misapprehension of fact that has been fed, they have weapons they continually choose to use to kill us. I mean, this just isn't true.
It's easy to understand why he would have that impression. For example, if he reads the New York Times, you know, he definitely would think that's the truth.
I want to come over then after that to what you wrote about the Museum of Modern Art, because this is what, when we're talking cultural institutions, folks, you know, sports, athletics, art museums, art, this is, we're now in the culture. This is the cultural message being communicated. But, you know, John, you had mentioned the piece from the Washington Post in our last segment, and I think we were looking at the same one because I was reading from it a little yesterday, and they cannot bring themselves to just accept the simple facts of things. If it's the same one or not, I don't know. But they wrote this. They wrote this. They quoted Mike Huckabee saying something along the lines of, if we have a shooting, we end up assuming that it had to be racial, when in fact, as we know, more white people have been shot by police officers this year than minorities, close quote. Then here's the Washington Post, the news line right after that. Huckabee is not factually incorrect. Huckabee is not factually incorrect. There's about five other ways an English teacher would tell you to write that sentence, isn't it? How about this is true or truth?
Right.
Yeah, Huckabee is not factually incorrect. I don't mean to make too much out of it. I really don't. But I think a volume is spoken by the way they write these things.
Well, you know, their own study of 2015 police shootings found that there are almost exactly twice as many whites as blacks shot by a policeman in 2015. That's just a basic fact that they acknowledge in their study.
And there's no, I mean, there was this kind of eerie other piece, and I think it was also in the Washington Post yesterday, eerie piece about a case in California. I think it was a 19-year-old boy. And the setup is how the police were trying to stop him due to, a headlight that was out. He put them on chase. Takes them through a high-speed chase. I think at some point leaps out of his car, runs. Something happens that goes bad, obviously, and then he gets shot. And it looks like a typical kind of suicide by cop thing. And then you realize they get to the punchline. It says, and this boy happened to be white. And the mother is, you know, pulling her hair out over this, as any mother would who loses a child. It's a terrible thing. But she's just wondering why there's no examination of it. And maybe there should be and maybe there shouldn't be. I think we over-examine and over-lift up every issue. You know darn well the police are going to investigate any shooting. I mean, anyone who watches any police shows just knows how much investigation goes on when a gun is drawn, much less when someone is shot. Can I keep you a little longer, John?
Sure.
Be right back with more from John Hinderacher. I want to tell you how the Museum of Modern Art got into the act. Be right back. Little Dolly Parton doing a little REO Speedwagon, but we got John Hinderacher here with us from the Powerline blog and just talking about the cultural misinformation that not only affects but infects the whole conversation piece he did on Powerline. John, tell us, we did athletics, we did news media, now tell us what the Museum of Modern Art is doing here.
Well, this is Instagram again, and they did an Instagram post where there's actually a very nice, a good painting of a black police officer sitting on the front of a squad car. But then there's text that accompanies it, and they say, in the wake of this week's tragic violence in Louisiana, Minnesota, and Texas, an assistant curator offers a meditation on the power of image-making as a tool for political intervention and shares three works from our collection by contemporary artists that respond to anti-black racism. And, of course, what jumped out at me was that of the three incidents that they refer to there, there was only one that was unambiguously racist.
Right.
And that was the killing of the five Dallas police officers
right.
by the guy who said, "I'm out to kill white people."
Exactly.
White policemen. That was the one clearly racist incident, and they skated right by it. And everything from there on was about responding to anti-black racism.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is what happens when you see race through everything. When you see race through everything, you see race through everything. And it's, you know, it's I'm not going to indict the entire culture here or the large parts of the culture here for being racist, but they are racialist, John. And that is, I'll end with you where I began. That's why it's just so sad. It's just all so sad to me. So much of this was supposed to be over. I was looking at a poll recently that's talking about views of race relations in America. So there's been about five times in our history recently where they've been worse. Like 1964, you know? How are we back there? How are we back at 19? It's just sad.
Well, the Democrats want us to be back there. You know, for them, that was the high point. It's always 1963, and we're always in Mississippi. You know, there's a political advantage for the Democrats and for the liberals. And it's also very difficult for them to confront the modern reality. You know, the fact that so much has been done to try to elevate the situation of African Americans, often successfully, but too often not successfully. It's also very difficult for them to deal with the success of other ethnic groups. Ask yourself how many of the people shot by policemen in 2015 were Asians.
Yeah.
You know, for example, you know, so they always want to kind of take us back to the time when things were simpler.
It's always Mississippi burning, right? What was it? Screwtape told his nephew, "You must fuddle them. You must always fuddle them. Keep them fuddled. Keep them confused. Keep them on edge." John, we rely on you to keep us clear. I really appreciate the time you've been able to spend with us.
Hey, thank you, Seth.
All right, brother. Be well. Say hi to the gang for me, okay?
Will do.
Talk
Bye-bye.
To you soon.